Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning, good morning from, kind of overcast Jerusalem. My name is Andrea Simintov. This show is Pull Up a Chair and Welcome to My Kitchen Table. Strange morning, strange times. Yeah, I'm the funny lady. We like to keep it light. However, there's things we're going to discuss today. Before we go on, I just want to tell you we have a guest. She's very tired. It's mind-blowing. My good friend, Menashe Zand, Iranian activist living in Brooklyn, head on the pillow, father murdered by the mullahs. And she's going to open our eyes and perhaps let us know who we're really dealing with. Should we be quaking in our boots or should we be acting business as usual? So we'll be talking about that today. I do want to tell you that today's show is a little bit unusual for me to do this. We try to keep it secular, try to keep it lofty, try to keep it non-parochial. However, today's show is in the merit of a complete recovery, a refuah shulema for the infant child, Yishai. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just so tired. Forgive me, everybody. Yishai Lavi Ben Talia Root. Everybody keep this little angel in your prayers today. Okay, so we'll be speaking with Menashe Zand. We'll be talking about the sirens going off last night in the Golan Heights. We'll be talking about, interestingly enough, when we talk about who we're dealing with, I have to know what Menashe is going to say about this because apparently... I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to laugh. This is serious stuff. But in the Iranian parliament, they burned an American flag and chanted death to America. Is this sophisticated behavior? Is this, are we getting a message here? Do you think that Donald Trump was, in his right mind canceling this deal? Or do you think this was a holy mission ready to happen? My name is Andrea Simintov. This is Jerusalem talking to you, and I'll see you on the other side.
I'm Jono Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
And we're back. Andrea Simintov at Pull Up a Chair. Because we're all very, very close, we're all very good friends, I should tell you, that the engineer, my stalwart engineer, said to me, do you have coffee? You sound very, very tired this morning. And you know what? Ze lo beseder. It's not okay. It's not fair. And that is why I am trying to get a little bit perky. Now, so the reason I'm saying we're very good friends is today's show could be a little bit butchered. We are waiting. We are waiting and trying to get my featured guest, Menashe Zand, on the line today. We're having trouble reaching her. So I'm going to start. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about how I met this fabulous gal. And if she doesn't come on the line, I'll talk a little bit about what her story is, what my conversation was like with her yesterday, which actually is probably even more or equally as telling. So I met Menashe several years ago making a video here in Israel. She was here. She was a featured guest of a Jewish political and activist organization. She is not Jewish, although I've been poking around her history a bit, and I think we might find the link, a maternal great-great-great-grandmother who was indeed a member of our tribe. Nevertheless, claims to be a Muslim, a secular Muslim, met her over, and we spent, oh my gosh, hours together over salads, makeup, jewelry, talking about men. Because she lives in New York, everybody in New York is Jewish. That is the fact. Meaning, if you're Puerto Rican, you're Jewish. If you're Jewish, you're Jewish. If you're Italian, you're Jewish. The only ones we have, you know, the Irish are not so Jewish. Benafshe Zand was Jewish, and I couldn't even stop saying her name because it was as romantic as her eyes and her passion and indeed her history. But her history was very interesting because her father was murdered by the mullahs of Iran, of the emerging Khomeini regime. Now, when I do this show, Andrea Simintov at Pull Up a Chair, on my computer, I have the name of my a few people on the top of my computer to remind me that if I can speak in front of them, then I can speak in front of you. And one of the things I have in bright yellow duct tape is the name Daddy. My father, may he rest in peace, was a moral man. He was a political man. He was a passionate man. He was a Zionist to his core. If you could say an infant is born with Zionist bones, that would have been my father. And Benafshe Zand, her father, was no less. So, I think we may even have her on the line soon. So this is very exciting. So the story is that, well, I just want to read you a tad of her bio because that's very important if I didn't lose it. So she was born in Tehran. Her parents were both journalists. She's a secularist. I'm a big fan of Parsi writing, and a lot of her story is not dissimilar to other books I've read in this country of men, for example. So according to her bio, she fled to Paris in 1979 following the uprising, and later she moved to New York to study film. I'm not unfamiliar with this because for many years I taught English as a second language to Persians who had indeed fled to New York. They couldn't get into Israel. They fled. Many of my students had lost family members hanging from the gallows, business people, intellectuals, academics. So Zand, she produced a documentary film after arriving in New York. It was about the chain murders. And according to her bio that she sent to me, it's about the gruesome assassinations of Iranian writers, intellectuals, activists, and scholars who opposed the theocratic regime of the mullahs. In 2001, her father, Sia Makpour Zand, and I'm sure that she will correct my pronunciation, he was a well-known journalist, pundit, public personality, really a Renaissance man, and he was abducted and imprisoned by the secret police of the Islamic Republic in Tehran. He was tortured. He spent years in and out of prison. His health deteriorated. I think he lost 60 pounds at one point. And ultimately, in April of 2011, he was assassinated, despite the Iranian claim that he committed suicide in protest. Benafshe is a consultant to academics and members of the media on all topics related to Iran. So we might be saying, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China today? This is not new. What does it have to do with us? Should we be quaking in our boots? I think I have her. Benafshe, are you on the line?
I am indeed, dear Andrea.
Oh, how perky don't you sound this morning? I'm sorry, this is like a serious topic, but I must tell the audience that we had quite a bit of back and forth with your screaming. I can't do this. I am so tired. So you're going to muddle the speech. But on a serious topic, you know there's rumblings. You know they burned the American flag. You have your finger on the pulse. You really are our connection to the heartbeat, the belly, and the mentality of both the Iranian public the Iranian leadership hierarchy right now? What's going on? Talk to me.
First of all, I would like to ask everyone to stop calling the Khomeiniist regime Iran. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They neither represent Iran. They don't represent Iranians. They are not elected. They have taken us hostage 39 years on. They have slaughtered close to 2.5 million Iranians. That's including the 900,000 young men and people who were killed during the 8-year vicious Iran-Iraq war in the 80s. So please don't call them Iranian, because they're not Iranian. They are an amalgam of some of the most disgusting and despicable characters that sort of have been, in terms of culture and ethnicity, are an amalgam of Lebanese, some Iranian, some Iraqi, some Syrian, and some Southern Turk, and that is basically the ethnic and cultural hub of where the Shia is sort of based. They're nothing more than a mafia, basically, that hide behind their bastardized version of Islam. And they claimed in every possible big lie they could to claim that the creation of Shia was in order to sort of strike out on the Iranian, on the Persian identity versus be under the Arab influence and so on and so forth.
All right, but wait. I'm going to jump in here 1 second because great, you're the voice of information, but nevertheless, we do have to have some kind of a, you know, in order to point our fingers to know which direction we're speaking in, how would you have us refer to?
Amir Tahiri and many of us Iranian analysts and activists refer to them as the Khomeiniist regime.
I love it. So for the sake
because
of
that's
thank
who they
you.
Are. Because that's
right.
Who they
so you're
are.
you're helping us. So you're really guiding us, and we're going to be able to change the entire dialogue because you're giving us new language.
I also very very sort of in my very sort of open and guileful way last week my dear friend Barbara Ladine retweeted a tweet from Mossad, and they made a funny joke about how we wish the Iranian regime would use the Zionist made switches for, I can't remember what it was, but it was for one of their silly nuclear developments and rockets, blah, blah. And I basically turned around and I said, I wish you would stop calling the Khomeiniist regime Iran or Iranian, because they are not.
Okay, so I want to get onto seriously a topic, because I have to tell you, Facebook is my life. It's my main news source, because I pride myself in being an idiot. Having said that, before we go on, Benafshe, are you frightened? Have you been threatened? You're very outspoken. Very outspoken? You know what? I have never heard you attempt once to put a lid on it. Are you frightened, and have you been threatened?
I was threatened a couple of times early on in 2004. In fact, interestingly enough, the first person to threaten me was Javad Zarif himself.
Okay.
In 2000.
And explain who that is. Who is that?
Javad Zarif is the Khomeiniist regime's foreign minister. He's the guy who signed all those deals with Kerry and Moniz over the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who has said Iran doesn't have political prisoners. He's the guy who has been, who was here in New York only 10 days ago at the Council on Foreign Relations, trying to sell Americans who, or, you know, the international community, let's say, who are willing and
okay,
and just too naive and are willing to listen to their pack of lies.
All right, Banavsheh, we're going to get cut off and we're going to come back in really just a few moments. Stay awake, get a cup.
Sure.
Stay awake, we're going to get back. This is fabulous. We're going to get down to the nitty gritty when we get back. I want to know the threats. I want to know the threats to Israel. I want to know the threats to America. See you on the other side.
Okay.
Shalom, everybody. Making a difference often takes just one moment and one person at a time. I'm Orly Benny Davis, your show host on Israel News Talk Radios from Jerusalem with love. You'll be hearing people talking about politics, religion, social issues, and making a better tomorrow. Join me, Orly Benny Davis, for God and Country. From Jerusalem with love.
Wednesdays on Israel News Talk Radio.
And we're back. Andrea Simintov speaking with you from an overcast Jerusalem. But more important, I'm on the phone with my good friend and powerhouse, Iranian, and she is Iranian to the core, activist Banavsheh Zand. And Banavsheh, are you with us?
I am indeed.
How awake are you, my friend?
I'm awake now.
You know what? I always call everybody my friend, but in this case, it's really true. You know, I make jokes. My new best friend. We've had powerful shows before. We had Kate Wilson on, really earth-shaking. But you, I need you to talk a little bit about, and I'm going to race you through because we have the chat room is open and people are going crazy. They want to talk about who didn't see the revolution coming, and that is what we're going to talk about in a minute. I want to talk about your father, your mother, who were they, who are they, and what really happened? What were we told and what really happened? Go, babe.
Well, my father, you explained it correctly in the beginning. He was a journalist. He was a free thinker. He was a really larger than life character. In fact, he was the only Iranian journalist who was there in Jerusalem during the trial of Eichmann. He covered that, and he.
Oh my! Wait a second. How did he get to do that? Did we have a relationship that we could do that? Did he get special permission?
Back then, under the Shah, yes, indeed. He interviewed Madame Golda Meir.
Right.
He got to drive around Israel with Moshe Dayan. He covered both cinema and politics. And so he was a really incredible individual and never left Iran after the revolution. He was one of those people who basically wanted to stick around and make sure that these guys lived up to the promises that they made and screamed from the rooftops in the beginning of the revolution when all of the intellectuals foolishly fell for their lies.
So he was not going to walk lockstep, and he called out what he saw. What was the price that was exacted from him?
Well, he went to prison four times. So they arrested him, let him, kept him for 2-3 years. Then they'd let him go, and then they rearrest him for something else, and then let him go. So the fourth time was in 2001, when they kidnapped him from in front of my aunt's house one evening, when he had walked some friends and relatives to the door. The guy from the Moise, from the Ministry of Intelligence, was standing there and just said to him, grab your coat right now. You're coming with me quietly, and took him. And that was that. I mean, we knew he disappeared, but, and we knew who disappeared him, But the regime basically didn't fess up to having him for, I guess, the first 4 months they had him.
I must jump in here a little bit because you're not so young. I mean, you look hot, but you were not so young, Benafshe Zand, Iranian activist. Okay. No. Because I want people who are tuning in now, and I want them to know to whom I'm speaking, what a powerhouse I'm speaking now. But your father must not have been stunned. There must have been rumblings in your home that this could happen at any time because he saw the writing on the figurative Persian wall. Am I right?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, I don't know, for many of the Iranian activists who have been doing this for a lifetime, mm-hmm. this is our purpose in life, you know? It's become like a, you know, there's this expression, I love this expression that was originally said by Emilio Zapata, which is, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And that's the way I look at it. My country, my future, my people, my culture was robbed from me by a bunch of thugs. Archaic thugs who have run roughshod over Iran for nearly 40 years. And the greater world has allowed them to, while we've been jumping and screaming and our people have been getting publicly hung and lies have been told on our behalf, or we have been misrepresented by this
right.
Region. So we do this because, you know, it's become sort of, it defines us now. It's who we are.
But wait, I'm going to jump in here because this beautiful depiction of Iranian pride that you put together, they used it after all of those years in and out of prison, the four times that he was imprisoned, and ultimately he was assassinated by your conclusion. But of course, they turned it on you. They gaslighted you, to use the terminology, and they said that his Iranian pride had him. He killed himself to prove a point.
Well, but you see, that's the thing, because that is one of the things that they're famous for in terms of some of the guys that they also assassinated during the chain murders.
Talk a little bit about the chain murders, okay, please.
Well, the chain murders was a group of the Iranian journalists, intellectuals, writers, poets, etc., who some of whom were originally supportive of the regime, some of whom were not, but ultimately they had become a serious obstacle for the regime. And what happened would be that they would be kidnapped.
Just
like my father, and they would be taken to prison, they would be tortured, they would be interrogated, they would be stuffed in the most horrifying solitary confinement. And then, they would be released, and a couple of them were found on the streets dead, just out of, you know. And then
was this to give a message?
No, this was in order to, you know. And then they claimed, oh well, we didn't kill him; they just we let him go, and they must have been so ashamed on the street they committed suicide. It's just like, are you kidding me? Who do you think you're talking to? We are, after all, and we have jokingly now refer to ourselves as the children of the revolution, who turn on the revolution, basically. And so, bottom line is that we everybody knew when because he was under house arrest. So when he one day just happened to fall out of the balcony of the house where he was under house arrest, especially when we were trying very hard to get the regime to let him go, because they had allowed him house arrest because of medical furlough, because the UN and because Amnesty International and various international human rights bodies had pressured them.
You jumped to my next question. I wanted to know, was there a pressure? Was there a public outcry?
Yeah, there was a public outcry, not a whole lot, because, you know, back then it was still, you know, everybody still wanted to pretend that the Khomeiniist regime was a sweetheart and that they could be talked to. And that if
a big improvement over the evil Shah.
Yeah, and if you just gave them a little hug and gave them and told them that you understand and you just all you want to do is be their friend, that would just bring them around, like, you know, the naive Obama charm offensive, which we all now know has backfired, as all of us Iranians knew. But anyhow, the thing is that ultimately we knew that the only way that we could keep the pressure on at that time, it was the early 2000s, was to keep screaming about it, which is the reason why I'm now like this, because it gets one thing that we've learned, the ones of us who fought this fight, is that if you keep screaming, it will scare them.
That's very, by the way, that's a very Middle Eastern thing. Forgive me for jumping in, but you've had your experiences with Israelis, and it's true. You know, the Anglos come in and we think that we'll reason and we'll talk. And I hear, even after the Trump speech, I'm reading from people, really good-hearted people, who say, you know, this is not the way to go. You just have to talk to them. There's no proof.
Oh, no, there's no, this is what people do not understand about the culture of the mullahs. They do not do dialogue. They continue to say, they are not kidding when they say that their word is the word.
Believe them.
It's not hyperbole. It is not hyperbole. It is their mandate. They have specifically said that their job, and I, people think that I'm kidding when I tell them that the Khomeini's regime has specifically said that it is their mandate to become the Islamic pole on the planet, which means what? Which means they will then ride through the Arab world and take over the Arab world by hook or by crook. And then once they've done that, guess what's next?
We got it. So listen, we're going to be taking a break in a minute. You're not going to sleep yet, okay? Just stay with me on this. I don't care what pajamas you're wearing. We're not going to, when we come back on the other side, this is very dramatic what you said. They mean it. They mean it. The Khomeini regime means it. Listen up, people. We're going to talk. When we come back, we're going to talk about where we should be thinking, where we should be going, what we should be doing, and some excellent other tags. Benafshe Zand, a name like music itself. I'm going to speak to you on the other side. Stay with me, darling.
Will do.
Okay, babe. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, this is Ari Folder. I want to invite you all to join me on my weekly show, Bulletproof, here on Israel News Talk Radio. It's the weekly show we discover, expose, and destroy all anti-Israel propaganda that's spread throughout the universe, both from outside Israel, including also inside Israel. Join me every week, and let's defend Israel together.
Bulletproof. Live every Sunday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern time.
And we're back. Andrea Simintov, pull up a chair in Jerusalem, Israel, speaking with my friend, guru, and someone I want to be when I grow up, Iranian activist. She's laughing. I promised her a nice piece of jewelry for being on this show. All right. Iranian activist, Benafshe Zand, who, laughing, girlfriend, but serious stuff. Daniel Seaman, another respected journalist. He wrote an article called "The End of Peace in Our Time," and I quote the byline. It says, "Like any good New Yorker, Trump knows that bullies prey on the weak. In New York City, the meek do not inherit the earth; they get mugged. You stop thugs like Iran by confronting, not appeasing them. Binafshe Zand, would you
Bravo.
Agree with that?
Just whoever wrote that.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah. So I believe that was Daniel Seaman, but hey, we can fix it. So the show is titled Mullahs Killed My Father, Murdered My Father. I want to, because we're running down on time, and of course I've just begged for a 2-hour show later on, and we're going to talk maybe another time, you're going to come on, and we're going to talk about whether or not intelligent and civil Iranians didn't see the revolution coming. I personally know the answer.
Let me just make one comment there.
Go.
I will say this. You can be as educated and as brilliant as you can be when it comes to degrees and all of that, but there's nothing like common sense. I'm going to say this, and I'm sorry if anybody's offended, but I'm not really sorry, is that the same people in Iran who were the intellectuals who went and supported Khomeini were the same people in the U.S. who were the equivalent of the voters of Obama. That's all I have to say.
I got it. And I need to do my research first. You're absolutely right. There's a sort of like a humanistic warmth. It's sort of like our indigenous Woodstock, inner Woodstock, that wants to believe that all people are good. Do you know that Lillian Hellman, who wrote the Broadway play, The Diary of Anne Frank, she actually changed the lines. She changed the words of Anne Frank, who, you know, really had, there was a very bleak ending to the diary. And instead, Lillian Hellman, who was a hardcore, she was a leftist of the purest sense. And she changed the lines and made it, despite all of this, of course, I'm paraphrasing, I do believe in the goodness of man. Anne Frank never said that. And we have people here who persist in whitewashing what is going on now in Iran and saying it won't be that bad. Now, there were sirens last night. People were sent to the shelters. The American flag has been burned in the parliament, not in the street, not by thugs.
Oh, no, but let me start to open a parenthesis there. I will be putting something together on that tomorrow, but just to give you a chuckle, and that is that all of the Iranian activists on Twitter have been laughing at the regime parliamentarians who did that. First of all, it took them 2 hours to try to find a proper lighter that worked, but of course you didn't see that on film. So that was the one big joke. It was really more like a Mac Sennett, you know, Keystone Cops kind of a effort. And the second thing is that most of those idiots, their children live in the U.S. and Canada. So everybody was saying to them, oh, well, you know, I bet you're not going to be setting fire to your American passport or your green card or asking
excellent.
Your kids.
Excellent. Excellent. So we could say once again, we have selective Iranian rage. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now I have to tell you, last night there were here in Israel, we, according to Reuters, because we really don't want to quote the Jerusalem Post, sometimes the news is a tad erroneous, but it says that last night Israeli missiles hit Syrian air defenses. And the Syrians reported that they are under siege by the Iranians. Our bomb shelters are starting to be prepped up north. And yet, when we had a conversation yesterday, Binafshe Zand, we talked about how people are getting hysterical, but you don't think that hysteria is a necessary response, necessarily a healthy response, a proactive response. Where would you think our thinking should be going at this time?
And first of all, can we say that the Khomeiniist regime isn't helping Hezbollah to help Hamas to do all of the 2006 and the 2009 and, you know, whenever they want to lob rockets over from Bint Jebel, you know, then aren't they screwing around in Syria, helping Assad? Aren't they screwing around in Yemen, doing whatever they can to rocket into Riyadh, in Saudi Arabia? Don't they mess around in various other parts of the world on a daily basis? So
wait, I must jump in here.
Surprise.
Exactly. But, you know, I have to jump in here because there's a lot of mixed feelings about it. Apparently, so there was an article, another Reuters article, that said that there are Gulf Arab allies that are positively jubilant about this withdrawal from the Iran deal. And Saudi Arabia, you know, great clothing. Saudi Arabia is positively ecstatic, you know, near orgasmic at the Trump decision.
I can assure you that about 75% of Iranians inside Iran and outside Iran are too.
Are they getting the news?
Oh yeah, of course they did. There are, of course, the obligatory loons. Mm-hmm. But then there's the percentage of people who work for the regime and so on, you know. But the fact of the matter is that the situation in Iran is unsustainable. People are starving. There's no water. Everybody's afraid because in the last year alone, we've had something like 10 or 12 earthquakes, some of them big, some of them small. It's a madhouse. The place is like run by, the mafia, the mobsters.
Wait a second. Now, wait, it's very funny. I generally speak from notes, but a ping just went off. I did not understand. If you are accurate, you're really talking about a chaotic situation, a madhouse, the right hand not knowing what the left is doing.
That's exactly what it is.
Brother, not trusting brother. So wait a second. Perhaps the story is not as bleak. Perhaps, if I dare, perhaps Iran is ready to be indeed to return to a state of normalcy. Yes, albeit with revolution. I mean, maybe there is a future for Iran after the cancellation of these sanctions and turning the thumbscrews of our allies, anybody who continues to do business with that Khomeini regime. Please.
Listen, the thing is that the Iranian people have been trying and trying and trying and trying to do their to bring their uprising to fruition every single day. Every single corner of Iran for the last 39 years has had protests. The international media has refused to cover it. When they've covered it, they've tried to cover it from the Khomeiniist regime angle. And just to keep those guys happy, they've twisted facts and told half-truths.
Whoa. You're talking about major, obviously, a lack of journalistic integrity, and you're talking about butt-kissing. Am I right?
Well, that's, yes, indeed. And that's the thing, is that unfortunately, the media coverage of Iran has been mainly in the hands of the big international media. And those people, in order to be able to have access into Iran, are always writing things with these slants and with these twists that basically accommodates the regime. Why? Because they need to be able to get in there and do some reporting, however half-assed it is.
And consequently, it has kept those of us in the West and in the figurative West in a state of near terror, near paralysis thinking what's going to be. And you're saying to me...
And the thing is that the ones of us who are the secular Iranians, and when I say the secular Iranians, I mean people who want a regime, a government that has a separation of religion and state, because we still have tons of Iranian Jews. We have the Iranian Baha'is that are absolutely abused inside Iran. Their children are prohibited from going to school. The Baha'i shopkeepers are basically, they do whatever they could to shut down their businesses. I mean, it's a nightmare what they do to the Baha'is. The Zoroastrians the same. The Jews.
Wait, I'm going to jump in here because we only have a minute left. Benafshe Zand. So first of all, I'm going to ask you before we go on, will you come back and speak to us another time soon?
Happily.
Okay. And the other thing is, before we go and before I say Shabbat Shalom, I want to know, is there hope for Iran?
Yes, there is. But people need to stick with us, secular Iranians who are screaming and yelling. We're all over Twitter. We have a network.
I will speak with you offline, and I will post anywhere that they can contact these groups. I'm going to say Shabbat Shalom, and they will speak to me, Andrea, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I will put them in touch with Binafsheh Zand and anybody who can help bring Iran back to its glory. Shabbat Shalom from Jerusalem.
Shabbat Shalom.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.